If you want to turn to Genesis chapter 12 this morning, as you can see probably on the screen, we're going to be in Genesis chapter 12, verses 1 through 25, verse 18. And as with the last 2 weeks, don't worry, we're not going to read the whole thing. We're going to look at a portion of that story as we move along. When I was a kid going to Sunday school and church, we would often sing a song very much to my mom's disliking, singing about Father Abraham. Now, the song is very repetitive and has a lot of actions that include moving body parts and moving different body parts, and you just kind of keep moving. I guess in some ways you might refer to Father Abraham as the Christianized version of the Hokey Pokey. Yet, in a strange beginning, Abraham was not the father of a multitude, as his name means. In fact, his name originally was Abram, which meant exalted father, or the father is exalted. But Abram was not a father at all, and definitely not a father of many children. That he was not the father had a place in God's choosing of Abraham, or Abram, as one of the characters that would be used to keep the storyline of history moving from perfection to perfection. It is the account of going from father of none to the father of many that I want to turn your attention to, and I want us to examine this morning. And while we rightly hold the faith of Abraham up, because we do need to be men and women of faith, but even more so, we lift Abraham up because he reminds us that none of us have a perfect faith. While the account of Abram's life runs from Genesis chapter 12, verse 1, to Genesis chapter 25, verse 18, we're going to break that down. We're going to pull out a few sections of that larger passage this morning to look at the life of Abram and the faith of Abram. And that begins with Genesis chapter 12, beginning with the first verse. And I'll just tell you, if you've got a paper Bible, that's wonderful. Keep your place, because we're going to pick up in chapter 12 and move forward from there. If you have an electronic device, just keep the screen on and keep scrolling, keep flipping the pages as we go. Moses writes, he says, "Now the Lord said to Abram, go forth from your country and from your relatives and from your father's house to the land which I will show you. And I will make you a great nation, and I will bless you and make your name great, and so you shall be a blessing. And I will bless those who bless you, and the one who curses you I will curse, and in you all of the families of the earth will be blessed." So Abraham went forth as the Lord had spoken to him, and Lot went with him. Now Abram was 75 years old when he departed from Haran. While Noah taught us that we don't get to decide how wicked, or too wicked is, Abraham will show us that no matter how trusting we are, we do not trust enough. And no matter how faithful we are often not as faithful as we would like to imagine. The story of Abram begins, of course, in the fact that he followed the promise. The reason that we talk about Abram at all is the fact that when God called Abram, Moses records that Abram left his father and he left Haran. He left what he knew to go to what was uncertain and even unknown. God asked him to pick up everything, to uproot everything, to drop everything. Now, I'm not sure how often God asks us to pick up everything, to drop everything, to leave everything. But there are times when God asks us, like Abram, to do something that takes some faith. Abram's faith was trusting God to show him where he needed to go, to provide for him in the journey, and to protect him everywhere he went. And Abram, for whatever reason, Abram heard the call of God, and Abram said, "I will. I will pick up my family, and I will leave everything, and I will go." That takes a lot of faith. That takes a lot of courage. That takes a lot of believing that what you've heard is what you were supposed to hear. And so Abraham was faithful because he went. Now, if you keep reading the story of Abram, and we're not going to get to this part, but later, when Abram is a little older, he's 75 when he leaves Haran and leaves his father's family behind. When he leaves that, he later goes into the promised land. He goes to where God is leading him, and a series of events happen. And one day God says to Abram, "Abram, I got another challenge for you." "Okay, God, I'm listening." "Abram, I want you to go and to circumcise yourself. And I want you to take all of your servants and every male in your household who is living with you, who belongs to you, who's traveling with you, whatever the case, if they are in your house, Abram, I want you to circumcise every male." And Moses records for us that when God asked Abram to do this not completely unheard of, but, you know, as an old man, an unheard of thing, Abram said, "I don't know why, God, but I'll trust you." I mean, God explained some of the reasoning, but I'm not sure that God said, "I want to make a covenant with you, Abram, and the way that you're going to show me that you're a part of this is you cut yourself." I'm not sure that I would be listening to God and saying, "You know what, God, that makes sense." But he did. Abram did what he was asked. And another piece of Abram's faith comes even later, and we'll look at a bit of this in a little while, but there came a point in time when God is saying, "Abram, I am going to make you into a father of many, and out of you will come many nations." And Abram is asking questions, and God says to Abraham, "It will be through your wife Sarah that this happens." And you know what Abram does? Well, Abram goes and he sleeps with his wife in the way that is necessary for children to be born. He goes and he trusts that God can do the unthinkable. Because by this time, Abram is 100 years old, or 99, and Sarah is about 10 years younger than him. And this is where we could normally insert the preacher jokes about buying diapers on Medicare, or Social Security, I guess. We're not going to go there, but the fact is that Abram, and by this time, because of other circumstances, it's pretty evident that Sarah is barren. Sarah is the reason that Abram and Sarah have not had any children. But he trusts God to do the impossible. And I'm not sure how many times we might do what Abram did. And we should look at the faith of Abram and we should lift that up, because that is supposed to motivate the way we live. But while Abram is the father or great father of faith, and by that I mean that he was the father of Israel, and that his faith is mentioned as an example for us to follow at many places in the Bible, especially in the New Testament. Yet, unfortunately, sometimes it isn't that we should emulate his faith, but rather we do emulate his faith. Now, some of you are old enough to remember the old comedy duo, Rowan and Martin. And you may have, I don't know, it may not have been your kind of program, but you may have watched their comedy skit, and I remember it from reruns on Nickelodeon, but there was this skit that caught my attention and has, well, because of the name, always stuck with me. They would offer or give what they would call the Flying Fickle Finger of Fate Award. As somebody whose choices they did not agree with, they would offer this award to. And from that, not that I believe that Abraham's faith was like that, but from that, I took the title for this morning's sermon, or this sermon title is kind of based off of that, and that is that Abraham is the father of fickle faith. Abraham, the father of fickle faith. And we see this in a couple of different ways. And the first is the fact that he lied to save his hide. Abram has left Haran and he is full of faith. We see him as a man of faith. But he gets to the promised land and there is a bad situation. And he picks up his family and he moves. He moves them even farther to the south, and he goes to Egypt. And while he's in Egypt, this is what Moses records, beginning with the 10th verse of chapter 13. It says, "Now when there was a famine in the land, so Abraham went down to Egypt to sojourn there, for the famine was severe in the land. It came about when he came near to Egypt that he said to Sarai, his wife, 'See now, I know that you are a beautiful woman. And when the Egyptians see you, they will say, "This is his wife." And they will kill me, but they will let you live. Please say that you are my sister, so that it may go well with me because of you, and that I may live on account of you." Okay, do you notice that Abram is not trusting God? He trusted God enough to leave Haran. He trusted God enough to wander to Cana and to make his home there and to wander around. But there is a famine and he decides to go to Egypt. And when he gets to Egypt, he looks at his wife, who is in her mid-60s, maybe even 70. And he says to her, "Hey, you're beautiful. Lie for me." He doesn't trust God enough to protect him. Do you see that? He doesn't trust God enough to protect him. So he says to Sarai, hey, I want to live. I want you to live. So let's lie. Or at one point we read that maybe it isn't an out and out lie as much as it is using the truth to cover the truth. Because it looks like maybe Sarai was a half-sister to Abram, and so to say she was his sister wasn't a lie. They were just hiding the fact that they were married. And so because of this, it led to a difficult situation. Because Abram was right. They moved to Egypt. Pharaoh sees Sarai, she's a beautiful woman. She looks attractive. She looks like somebody that he would like to have in his harem. And so Pharaoh takes Sarai. And the problem is that God is protecting the promise while Abram is being fickle. And so some circumstances happen and things take place, and Pharaoh eventually says, whoa. This is not just your sister. And it led to a bad situation for Pharaoh and his household, but it also led to a bad situation for Abram. And eventually Abram leaves and goes back to Cana. Sarah goes with him, and through some a series of events, Pharaoh, to appease God, sends some blessings with Abram. But Abram doesn't trust. And there are times, I am certain there are times when the situations around us look bad and we think the best way to handle them is, well, we just do what we have to do. And if this was the only time that we could say that Abram made a promise or made a mistake, he was unfaithful, he was disobedient, he was a little fickle, we could chalk that up to a mistake and a learning opportunity. The problem is that a few years later, Abram is traveling around Cana and he comes to a spot that's pretty good. The problem is that once again, he looks at his wife and says, you are gorgeous. And the problem is these people are going to see that you're gorgeous and I want to live, so tell them you're my sister. Yeah, he does the same thing in Cana that got him trouble in Egypt. And he gets him trouble in Cana, and it causes problems because one lie led to another, and one lie led to one problem, and the second problem he tried to cure by the second lie only led to deeper problems, which eventually led to some bad relationships with the people who he was supposed to be living with and among. And sometimes when we get a little fickle on our faith, we don't trust God's wisdom. And we don't trust God's provision. And we don't trust God's protection. And that's a problem. But the bigger problem is when we live that way, and the people in the world around us who know that we are followers and servants of God see the way we're living, they say, you don't live any different than us. Why should we trust your God? And Abraham, he lied to save his hide. And the second thing that we see is that he tried to find the promise on his own. He lied to save his hide with Pharaoh and with the Canaanites. But later, or as we study through the story of Abram, we find that there were times that he also tried to provide for the promise on his own. Well, it began with what we read in chapter 12, verses 1 through 4, because if you notice in that passage of Scripture, God said to Abram in Haran, leave your father and your father's family and go to a land that I will show you. And Abraham picked up his family and took Lot, his nephew, along with him. Now, Abram is 75 years old. Sarah is 65 when they're asked to leave Haran. And so the natural assumption was, I got to find somebody that can be my heir. I'll trust God. I'll do what God asks, but I have to have an heir. I have to have somebody who can carry on the promise that God is giving to me. There has to be somebody who is the beneficiary. And this was normal practice. A husband and wife were barren. One of the things that would take place is they would find a family member. They would make them part of their immediate family so that they had somebody to inherit and somebody to carry on their name. The problem is this is not what God asked Abram to do. God said, Abram, leave your family. And Abraham obeyed almost. He almost obeyed. He almost did what God would ask him to do. And I think that there are times when God comes to you and to me and he says, you know what? I want to move you forward in your faith. I want to use you in a situation in life, but to do that, I need you to let go, to leave, to get rid of something from your past. And we say, God, I'll go where you want me to go. And then we tow along. We bring along a piece of the present or the past with us because we think it's part of what God is asking us or part of the way that God is going to fulfill his promise in the future. And we have to be careful because sometimes God takes the things of our past and brings them with us into the future. But sometimes he asks us to leave and to leave the past behind. And again, if we could just look at this one opportunity, this one circumstance, and say this was just a bad choice on Abram's part, and he learned from it, we could say, good, Abram is growing in his faith. The problem is this is not unique. Because we look down a couple chapters to Genesis chapter 15, and we read this beginning with the first verse. It says, after these things, the word of the Lord came to Abram in a vision, saying, do not fear, Abram. I am a shield to you. Your reward will be very great. Abram said, O Lord God, what will you give me, since I am childless and the heir of my house is Eliezer of Damascus? And Abraham said, since you have given no offspring to me, one born in my house is my heir. Then behold, the word of the Lord came to him, saying, this man will not be your heir, but one who will come forth from your own body shall be your heir. So again, Abram is looking to fulfill the promise of God in a purely naturalistic and in a normal manner. Because by this time, Lot is out of the picture. Okay, the nephew is no longer part of the family, who at least is going to remain a part of the family and be the heir. God, I know you've promised some things,
But since I still don't have any offspring of my own, I'll put forward Eliezer. He was born in my house. He's one of my servants. He was, you know, a servant had Eliezer, so he is my servant. And so he was born in my house, and God, surely he can be my heir. You know, there are times when we look at situations and we know what God has called us to, and we're fairly certain of that, but we don't see how God is going to do what he asked us to do, or how God is going to take care of us, or how God is going to provide for us. And so we begin to put forward other options and say, here, God, is here is an option of the way that you can take care of this. Here, God, is a way that you can provide. And kind of like with Abram, God looks at our woeful attempts, our meager provisions, and say, you know, no. You're not listening. You're not hearing. You're not doing what I'm asking you to do, and that is to have faith that I will provide and I will take care of you. And Abram, I will provide an heir. One born from your own body, Abram. You will have a descendant that comes from you. And Abram listens, and Abram goes his way, and Abram does his stuff. And then in chapter 16, we read this. It says, now, because by chapter 16, he still doesn't have any descendants. Now, Sarai, Abram's wife, had borne him no children, and she had an Egyptian maid whose name was Hagar, probably sent back from Pharaoh. You know, when they went and lied, part of the deception probably leads to this situation. It says, so Sarai said to Abram, now behold, the Lord has prevented me from bearing children. Please go into my maid, and perhaps I will obtain children through her. And Abram listened to the voice of Sarai. After Abram had lived 10 years in the land of Canaan, Abram's wife Sarai took Hagar, the Egyptian, her maid, and gave her to her husband Abram as his wife. He went into Hagar, she conceived, and when she saw that she had conceived, her mistress was despised in her sight. There are problems on the horizon that are caused by Sarai and Abram's decision to bring the handmaid in as an option for bearing children. Now, in our day, we may frown on this and think that this is a wrong way to handle the situation. And I have to agree. I'd have to say, yes, it was. The problem is, in the time when Abram was living, and in the generations that followed, in a society that relied upon very much upon children to carry on your name and to carry on your life's work and to provide for you when you got older. I mean, Abram and Sarai are already older, but you know, you need children to provide for you. And it was not an unheard of practice for a servant to bear children for a barren wife. I mean, that's why it doesn't seem completely out of place when Jacob will take the handmaids of his two wives to be wives, to bear him children in their place, for Leah and Rebekah. But, or Rachel, excuse me, not Rebecca, Rachel. But anyway, it wasn't an unheard of practice. And so Abram said, hey, I guess. I don't know, maybe he jumped at the chance, maybe whatever. But he goes in and he takes Hagar and he sleeps with Hagar. And they have a child. And we know that this causes problems. It has likely been the problems that have brewed since then for the last 4,000 years to some extent. But it was their desire to fulfill the promise on behalf of God. And God says eventually, Abram, this is not how I'm going to provide an heir. And we go back to the point where I said earlier in the first point when we talked about the good faith of Abram, that he slept with Sarah. He trusts God and does what God requires for Sarah to have a child. Problem is he's done an awful lot to try to find ways to protect himself and to provide for the future that he thinks God or that God has promised him. And it only leads to other problems. And it's only after this, it's only after these events that God changes the name of Abram to Abraham. And only then it comes as a reiteration of the promise that God has made to him. And God is saying, Abram, you've tried everything else. Now trust me. It's only after this part of the story that Abraham will do what is necessary on his part for God to provide what God has promised. And this is the story of Abraham gives us two lasting lessons. The first is, we do not get to decide when or how God will fulfill his promises. And the second is this, Abraham shows us that we must have one who will trust and obey no matter what. While we cannot or will not always be faithful to trust and obey, we must always try to do so. And to do so more fully. And while we wait for God to fulfill his ultimate promise, we must faithfully wait. And so as we say with the Apostle John, come, Lord Jesus, let us wait faithfully and obediently.